begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any agenda changes, additions, or deletions?
There is a board or a cover sheet that was corrected.
Okay.
What number was that?
8.3.4 Montano Pony.
Okay.
The total on the original was incorrect, and it's been corrected.
So it didn't match.
Mm-hmm. And I also made a couple of changes to the agenda. I should point that out, but they've all been reposted for you. And the agenda changes were that the staff report and the local indicators was actually new business after following the public hearings. You will need to take action on that.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, in the closed session, I corrected the years. They're 2017-18 for the discussions on the salaries, not 2018-19.
Thank you. Okay. The next item is public comment. Are there people who would like to speak to items that are not on the agenda?
Casey Carlson for the Federation, not on the agenda. Just wanted to let the board know that we voted on our tentative agreement and it passed. And that most teachers were very, very, very grateful and very appreciative. We did have two no votes, and those were protest votes, and they said it isn't enough money. We need more to live here, which we know. But overall, the sentiment was very positive and thankful, and so we're looking forward to that, hoping that, you know, that we'll be able to get this wrapped up in November and move forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I think we'll move on to the superintendent's report.
Busy couple weeks, lots of exciting things going on. As always, my report is based on the district goals. Under goal number one and goal number three, that will successfully prepare all of our students for post-secondary college and career opportunities and eliminate the achievement gaps that exist between the demographic groups. I'd like to share that all three of our high schools successfully administered the PSAT on Wednesday the 10th. I spent my Sunday with Harbor High and Soquel High Interact Clubs at the Fall Leadership Forum at Independence High School. It was a great day, really inspiring youth speakers and great workshops for the kids. It's them on the left there. On Monday and Tuesday this week, our district leadership team for NGSS was at our first Bayside workshops for the year. We had a really productive day and a half, and have outlined our next steps for the next 3 years. So it's exciting. Last Thursday, October 11th, I attended with several people the County Mental Health Stakeholder Engagement Meeting at the Santa Cruz Police Department. Greg O'Mara was there, Stacy LeCagnon, Casey Carlson, Deb Tracy Crew. It was an opportunity for us to talk about the needs of youth in terms of local county mental health. And we had an opportunity for some good conversation and collaboration. On the goal number four, we'll develop a highly collaborative professional culture focused on supporting effective teaching. Our middle school skill teams had a facilitation training by Julia Hodges on Monday, October 8th. I sent her, it was wonderful, really, really great feedback for teachers, and they're going to have a second day of that coming up this next week. We had appreciation visits to maintenance and operations and transportation. We always, the cabinet always goes out to all of our satellite central office divisions at the beginning of the year to talk about the goals for the year and celebrate the work that our team is doing. And next week we're slated to visit ABC Unified for the West Coast Labor Management Forum. Casey, two principals and two site reps will be attending, or an assistant principal, a principal, and two site reps will be attending the full conference with Molly and me, and Dorothy and Greg will be joining us on the first day when we visit. We're going a day early to visit a middle school and a high school there to look at their MTSS supports for climate and culture and social emotional learning. And when I was on the phone with Dr. Mary Sue, who's the superintendent, this last week, finalizing our plans for the school visits, she asked that Casey, Molly, and I do a breakout presentation during the conference on Wednesday. So we're going to be sharing our PAL journey during a 45-minute breakout session.
Chris, ABC, where is that?
That is... It's Santa Ana is where we're flying into.
Oh, down in Buena Park. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Down in that area.
And then goal number six, Bookshop Santa Cruz sponsored Chelsea Clinton's visit, her book talk at Westlake. You could call that both goal number one and goal number six. The kids were just on fire, excited. And she did such a nice job of talking to kids about leadership and talking to kids about opportunities to make a difference in the world. And the kids asked great questions about her book, which is about making a difference, and about what it's like to be a child in the White House. And then our State of Schools mailing finally arrived this last weekend. I was calling people saying, has it come yet? Because I haven't got mine. So... that wraps it up for tonight's report, and thank you.
Okay. Next item is student report. Dorothy?
Yes, I would like to introduce Christine Chris, who is a junior at Costa Noa, and we would like to welcome her as one of our student board trustees.
Good evening, members of the school board and members of the public. I am Christine Perez. I am a junior at Costa Noa High School. It is an honor to be here tonight, and here is a brief Costa Noa update. 10 of our students have just started Mountain 2C. It is an outdoor program. Outdoor learning program, and they meet every Friday. And then also our spectral artist Jay is co-teaching a unit called Photo Voice. The end product will be a book filled with photos and student writing. Tomorrow, Costa Noa Leadership, which I am part of, will be hosting an event entitled Thrilling Thursday. This will include field games, garden scavenger hunts, and pizza. We'll be involving students from Monarch Community School and in all of our activities. And finally, Costa Noa currently has 90 students. We will have orientation on October 29th, and we will be adding 8 more students. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome. Dan?
Welcome, Christina, for being here. It's nice to see you. As Chris mentioned, I did attend the community health county stakeholder meeting. That was really interesting. Also, today, Claudia and I attended the Adult Ed Advisory Council, mm-hmm. Whose president is 96 years old and amazing. She was a teacher in the district and has been with them ever since. I also had the opportunity to see Chris and Molly and Trevor and a few other staff members and many, many people in the community at Harbor High's 50th homecoming with the lights, which was very exciting for everyone involved, so it was really fun. And the band was great.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Patty?
Welcome, Christine. I'm glad to have you here. So I attended the community meeting this last week and thank Claudia for her leadership there with the meeting and engaging the community. Wasn't a large group, but happy to hear some of the voices in our parent community. I also attended the SoCal High School parade and homecoming game where Josh was a member of the homecoming court, so I'm sorry he's not here, but he was his leadership is very much valued at the school, and it was really a great event. It was actually huge. I'd like to thank the CHP for letting the parade go around the block twice. It's the first time in history, and it was pretty exciting. And the parents loved the do-overs because they got to actually take their pictures again. I also attended the Westside Open Streets on Sunday. And it was pretty interesting. It offered a lot of community and a part of our community, heard a lot of voices. It also had a lot of non-public school agencies having booths and talking to that part of the community. So I was able to, and I kept the card, there's a middle school that is science-based that works out of the Garfield Church now. They have 14 students, and their leadership was there speaking, along with Gateway, Spring Hill, and then just members of the PCS community that we run into. So that was pretty interesting. I also am excited that this Saturday will be the band march over in front of the boardwalk, and Santa Cruz High leads it off, and they also, Ms. Latham has sent an invitation, I believe it was to everybody, to come. She talked about how the scoring happens, and Santa Cruz High has a long tradition with their marching band. They're very, very excited for this piece, so I hope you'll take the opportunity to attend. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also got to go to Westlake and see Chelsea Clinton, who really impressed me because she was extremely good at getting the students involved and answering their questions. And I just couldn't imagine having lived the way she had to in the public eye all the time, but she was the most down-to-earth person. It was great. And the students were great. They were very, and the teachers were great with them in terms of their enthusiasm, but also getting them to keep it together, you know, to talk and sing and clap and all those things, you know, in a way that really was impressive. I welcome Christine. Is it Christine or Christina?
Christine.
Christine, okay. I have my own little trips I'm making because it's not so easy for me to get to the schools now to walk around. But I'm going to see the Bond projects and was happy to see the La Viega parking lot looking as good as it does, and the new structure at the small schools. And so I just wanted to say it's so nice to see the results. And I just want to see Mission Hills front then, because I have to drive by it almost every day. What?
January,
yeah, okay. I can hold on for a while longer. And I just wanted to say that when the state of our schools came to my house, I sat down and read it cover to cover. And it just really, I'm so glad that this is something that we started to do. And it really impressed me. It really made me feel, like, very proud of our schools. And I appreciate that we put the time and effort into doing it. That's it. Yeah.
Well, I also attended the SoCal High School community meeting, and parents were talking about their wonderful music programs there at SoCal High School. I went to hear a report about a sabbatical project focused on music and the brain development, and one of the studies monitored students in the El Sistema program, and then control groups of students who did soccer and another that did no organized activity. And I wasn't surprised by the connection with math and reading, But what surprised me was the growth in pro-social skills and empathy. I didn't see the link until this, and it's a 7-year longitudinal study, and if anybody wants the link, I can send it to you. It's really interesting. I attended the groundbreaking for Leo's Haven, and that's going to be the first inclusive park in Santa Cruz County. And it was an opportunity to talk to a lot of Harbor High School parents who love the new field and are excited about the pool and had just gotten their State of Our Schools mailing and loved hearing about what's going on. This morning, as Deb said, we went to the Adult Education Community Advisory Council. Nice to hear the larger picture of what's happening in adult education countywide. So I really enjoyed that, too. And the next item is approval of the minutes, and this is the minutes for October 3rd.
I move approval.
Second.
Deb and Sheila. Okay. I won't ask because you weren't at that meeting, but all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Thank you.
Okay, now we have our consent agenda. Are there any items that people have questions about or would like to pull? Go ahead, Patty.
I have a question about 8.3.3, the Fresh Start Caning, and I also just have a comment for 8.1.5, the Williams Act, and the question I think can be answered, let me make sure I click on it, I'm sorry, this is new to me here we go, on the Fresh Start painting. So it looks like they're doing additional windows at Natural Bridges, so we're spending nearly $200,000 in that arena, and as I understand it, thank you, the district helped me out with some of the pieces of the question, that the painting should be complete by next week. I just wanted to know, are we using, what was the word they used in that? Sorry. Here we go, Fresh Start Painting. I don't see it written into it, but the supply company states that you need to use, when we purchase this, there we go, Coastal Hardware. Are we using Coastal Hardware? Can we just see those things listed when we have these type of contracts to make sure, because we don't live within 4 miles, we live within 4 blocks of the coastline for that school, meaning that if the windows go in, when we're paying for it, I don't see what part of it, it just said wood.
So what they're talking about there is attachments besides wood, so there's little metal screws and spaces and all those type of things. So rather than using regular standard metal or even simple galvanized metal, they use appropriate aluminum pieces that are basically resistant to salt.
Well, no, I understand that. I just want it on a contract somewhere so we can go back to it. Thank you.
Did you have another?
Yeah, and then I just, on the Williams report, I would like the board to really consider that, is this the right mechanism for people to come forward with their concerns? Because, we've had all these needs in our school. We've had things like come up. And when you ask the parents, they will tell them to you. And I don't know if that's the right process to actually get it into maintenance and operation and when it happens. And so the visual to what's happening, to can the work be done, and what's the best way for the district to approach it. I mean, we've had nothing but zeros, but meaning that we wouldn't be asking for any bond money if we continued to look at our Williams reports. So I just want to think this through. Is this the right mechanism to bring for the parents to know where it is and where to put their concerns about facilities, mostly around facilities, I would say that.
Okay. Go ahead, Sheila.
Well, I'm just going to take advantage and sneak in with the Natural Bridges painting. It looks great, and I have heard from the community since started painting. Now I'm hearing, we're so happy it's going to be a school, and it's just like so exciting, and the neighborhood's really happy. And I think it's because now it looks good. Great. Yeah. But I just wanted you to know that there's a real enthusiasm coming from the community around it now, too.
And Dan?
I just had a question for Patty. Was the question you had on the hardware about the cost or the items being included?
Just the items being included, because the bottom of the contract says that you must use the host, that their recommendation is for the coastal hardware, so meaning that it's upon the district. And I know that Trevor knows what it needs, but who is actually doing the work to when these people have this, and we've seen it happen all over. So it's just those small details I'm asking for in the contracts.
So is the all-weather architectural aluminum, is that the coastal hardware, or is that something else?
That's
part of it?
That's part of it. I mean, that's the assembly is coastal, but it's also the parts that attach it to.
That's right. So somebody could just run into Home Depot if they didn't have the right screws, pick any screws they think that fit, and then rust out the whole windows within a year or two, because we're not 4 miles, we're 4 blocks from the beach on that particular one. It's just those sort of things. If they're in the contract, let's put them in the contract. It just makes it easier to point back to.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments from the public? Is there a motion?
I move approval. Second.
Thank you. And student recommendation. Student recommendation.
You don't know if it's at state.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
And the next item is the vote on readmission of expelled student.
Okay. I move to readmit student number 03-17-18 as of today.
A second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Thank you.
And now the report of actions taken in closed session.
The Board of Education heard information on the readmission of expelled student 3-17-18 in order to vote on action later in the meeting. The Board of Education took action on certificated classified management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. Ms. Parks did not have any information to report to the Board regarding public employee discipline, dismissal, release, complaint. The Board of Education heard an update from and provided direction to Ms. Parks regarding negotiations with the GS. SCFT for 2017-18. The Board of Education heard an update from and provided direction to Ms. Parks regarding negotiations with SCCCE for 2017-18. And the Board will return to closed session after the adjournment of open session.
Thank you. Our next item is a staff report on the LGBTQ task force.
I would like to introduce Director of Student Services, Greg O'Meara, who will be introducing our task force report today.
Tonight's staff would like to provide general information, hopefully a very exciting update, and this is going to be a group presentation. To that end, I'd like to introduce Ron Indra and Rob Darrow, both from the Safe Schools Project, and integral founding members of the LGBTQ Task Force here in Santa Cruz City Schools. And these two gentlemen have been very, very helpful in my professional transition as I coordinate and facilitate this amazing group of individuals. So that being said, I am going to talk a little bit about generalities, purpose, foundation of the organization. Ron is then going to take over and talk about some of the previous work that's been done over the last 2 years. And then Rob's going to finish us up with our focus moving forward this year. So it's all great stuff, and here we go. So generally speaking, again, I'm very new to the task force as I am to the district, but the task force was created back in 1617 to raise awareness and provide general support for our LGBTQ students and families, providing them with a safe and welcoming environment, equitable access to their educational experience, and just a general feeling of safety on our campuses. The group is comprised of about 15 or 20, I say 15 or 20 because we had only one meeting so far this year, and we have about 12 people around the table. But we have representatives from the school district staff, administrators. Rob and Ron, of course, are on the committee and on the task force. And there's also various members of our community and representatives of different advocacy groups for our students and families. This particular task force is comprised of four subcommittees that allow us to focus a little bit better on certain areas of collaboration and support. I'll get into those in just a second. We hope to provide, we don't hope, this will happen. We are charged with providing timely updates to the superintendent, and it is our hope, and we're not sure if this is official yet, but it is our hope that we can return annually with reports of our progress with the task force to the board. So I did mention four specific subcommittees of our general task force. Those subcommittees are our curriculum subcommittee, climate, policy, and a subcommittee that deals with resources. So just a little bit about each of those four subcommittees. First of all, our curriculum subcommittee, while it is not the task force's position or responsibility, nor is it the responsibility of this particular subcommittee to monitor or observe instruction or curriculum, we do want to provide support and training to teachers in crucial areas that will help our LGBTQ students in the area of learning curriculum. So that's that particular subcommittee. Our climate subcommittee is focused on creating and maintaining and enhancing a welcoming and safe environment for our students and for their families. Our policy subcommittee is focused on general awareness and general delivery of policy and making sure that our school community is aware of the most recent legislation and policy updates that have to do with LGBTQ laws and policies as they relate to our schools and community. And last but not least, our resources subcommittee. They are here to ensure that there's equitable access and availability to all the resources that are out there available in our community. And the good news is there is a tremendous amount of resources in our community, a tremendous amount of supportive tentacles to access. However, if we need to make efforts to make those systems easy to navigate and make sure that those systems of support are equitable for our families and our students. So that's just a rundown of our four subcommittees. And in our annual reports to the board and, of course, in our timely communication to the superintendent, we'll report on the work of all four of those committees. All right, I'm going to hand it over to Ron. He's going to talk, as I mentioned, about some of the previous work that's been done on the task force over the last couple of years.
Good evening. It's great to be here. Also want to give you some historical background. I've been in the school district a little over 400 years. This task force has gone, has a rich history. It goes way back into our past. It comes in when there's a need for it, and then sometimes it takes a quick leave, but then comes back if something else comes forward. So we have a long, rich history of supporting our LGBT students. But this last 2 years with this particular task force, we have gotten together a cohort of teachers county-wise to help them learn our new curriculum on LGBT history, which is mandated by the state, as well as SB 71, which mandates that health and sex ed has to be LGBT inclusive. And we have run cohorts of teachers through both of these trainings. We have training guides for both of those things. We're like on the cutting edge of the country. And then we also, this year, with the help of Eileen Brown, we pulled disaggregated LGBT information from our California Healthy Kids Survey. And now we're going to be able to look at that information. And then at the end of last year, I surveyed all the GSAs in Santa Cruz City Schools. We got input from the students that we now can look at, which is super important. And then we also examined federal law, state law, local, make sure that the laws turned into ed code and were made policies and that we adopted appropriate policies to enforce those ed codes. We redid our website, making sure that we have the latest resources for our students to go to, our staff and our parents, and make it more easily accessible. And then we're right on the cutting edge. We're putting together an LGBT Safe Schools Index that sites will be able to look at their sites and look at the great things that they're doing for LGBT students and then other areas that they may want more help. Of course, the Safe Schools Project is there for that.
Good evening. Good to see all of you again. The our focus for other things in the future is really an extension of the different areas that Ron just talked about. We want to continue the work around LGBTQ curriculum in the history area and health and inclusive sex ed in that areas. We know that teachers turn over in our schools, and so we want to make sure that they get the up-to-date training that many of your teachers already receive. We want to continue to look at the data that's been out there, especially around the Healthy Kids Survey, the disaggregated data, especially around LGBTQ students, as well as the survey work that Ron did with the Gay Straight Alliances that are out there. And then finally, the Safe Schools Index concept is a concept we've been talking about. We talked with Chris about it a couple months ago, and she looked at it and said, oh, this sounds great, and she liked it so well that we decided to hopefully get a grant from the Community Foundation to move that whole concept forward. We haven't heard if we've gotten that grant yet or not, but help keep our fingers crossed we get that, and then we'll be able to really implement that and work with your school administrators to decide how that looks so it's most useful to all of your schools and your school district throughout. And then we also want to explore ways to better use the social media and digital applications, and then finally we want to have some students on our task force overall. So, and I'll just add one PS, we're excited that your superintendent is presenting a lot of this stuff at the California School Boards Association meeting in about a month, right?
Mm-hmm. End of November,
yeah. So that concludes our report.
At this time, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions or field any comments from the board.
Okay. Sheila.
First of all, I just recently got on this committee. And is there a way I'm supposed to have known that there was a meeting? because I didn't.
Yeah, I went off a distribution list that was created
by Eileen.
I had sent that out, and I my sincere
okay,
apologies.
I'm not offended.
I'll make sure that
I literally got on at the end of the year,
okay.
So I'm not offended by not being.
Okay.
But I would like to be able to.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll revise that and get that out.
Okay.
My apologies.
Okay. And my other question is, I apologize if I should already know this, but if a student was experiencing an uncomfortable situation, maybe harassment, maybe not, but an uncomfortable situation at their school, how do they know the process to go through to get help with that situation?
Yeah, well, each site has specific protocol for discrimination, anti-bullying, anything that has to do with any kind of harassment. They would report that immediately to either their teacher or their administration.
So there's no way in which we don't have like things given out at the beginning of the year that kind of tell students what they can do. They would have to go talk to somebody and then find out that they had rights or had a direction that they could go. Is that right?
Well, are you speaking specifically in terms of the LGBT
well, I could,
realm or just...
I could broaden the realm,
yeah.
But I'm trying to stay narrow here because I'm just trying to understand if a student was in that position, they might not think, you know, this is bullying, or I have rights here. And I'm wondering if there's any way that we bring this to their attention at the beginning of the school year or at any, you know, in health class or anywhere along the way where they learn how to navigate the system if they need to. Does that make sense?
No, that's a great question. I know that at all the sites, the counselors are making class visits at the beginning of the year. They're communicating expectations at all the sites. They're communicating steps to be followed if they are harassed. So that piece about communicating to the students what to do, that does happen naturally at all sites through the counseling presentations and through general presentations from teachers and from administrators. So the students know of the process, and that is communicated to them at the beginning of the school year through different forms.
So I'm just going to make a little suggestion from somebody who talks to a lot of the high school students in this area, that something at the counselor's offices, some available piece of paper that would tell them when they're in the middle of the situation, because they might not be listening to the counselor early in the year, that they could walk in and say, is there something here that could help me, might be a great thing to do.
So just to add to that, that's a concern across the county. I'll say what you're asking, but part of our Safe Schools project is if there's a student who kind of falls through the cracks in that relationship you're talking about there, then they contact us, and then Ron will collaborate with the school regarding whatever that is. But this Safe Schools Index that we're working on will help address
right.
some of those things as well as the communication. The other thing to know is through the County Office of Education, we're working on updating the Safe Schools Plan that we write every year, and it will address some of those issues you're talking about in that this year around for the first time. So
the
concerns you're bringing up are concerns across the county that are going to soon be addressed.
Great.
In a better way, I think.
That's great. Thanks.
I just wanted to publicly thank Ron and Rob while they're here because they've met with me a couple times this fall as I am preparing to present to AAC about our district's work and the task force work, and I just am really grateful, and just they've been incredibly supportive, given me a ton of resources, and we've talked a little bit about the index and some things we might add, and what an incredible tool I think it will be for school leaders mm-hmm. to evaluate mm-hmm. kind of the safety, the status of the safety on campus.
Mm-hmm. Patty?
Thank you, and thank you, Sheila. Very good question. I'm going to take it a little bit broader because what I'm thank you, Mr. Darrell, and Mr. Indra, Mr. O'Meara, what I'm hoping for, and it'll tie into our LCAP, is more so in our next rounds, bringing the process and what that really looks like, because not only in this particular community, but all communities for our kids, what is the process when something's not going right? And so that it becomes routine to know, hey, this is the way I move, so I don't have to listen in the beginning of the year when I'm not listening, or in the end of the year when I'm not listening, but when it applies to me. So I would just like to put that out, and then for also our future presentation. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Yeah, what'd she say?
Comment or question?
I just wanted to comment the fact that Chris is presenting at AEC for CSBA is members of school boards over the hill in the Bay Area specifically sought us out as a role model, not just for the Bay Area but for the state. And so I want to obviously commend your work and thank you for working with Chris. And this year we have two presentations on addressing the needs of LGBTQ+ students. It's the first time in the history of the conference they've done that. Mm-hmm. And we actually, at Chris's presentation, we'll have three youth panelists talking about their experiences, which is also the first time we've had students present. So thank you.
Thank you. Comments or questions from the public? Well, thank you. It was a very interesting presentation.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
right, now we're going to close our meeting and have a public hearing on the local control accountability plan. Any comments or for the public? Looks like not. So I'll close the public hearing, and now we will talk about the local control accountability plan as a board.
So the California School Dashboard contains both state and local indicators. So for the LCFF priorities, where the state does not collect data, each LEA must measure and report its progress through the dashboard based on locally collected data. The local indicators are priority one, basic conditions at the school or at school. Priority two, implementation of state academic standards. Priority three, parent engagement. Priority six, local climate survey. And priority seven, which is a new priority, access to a broad course of study. What's really nice about the local indicators is it really emphasizes that, just as it is stated in the name, it is local and it's determined locally. And we are doing a self-study locally about how we are progressing on each of these indicators. It's also really nice to see that the gauge or measure of the effectiveness of our school and our district is not just based on test results from standardized tests, as important as that is and as insightful as that is, but we also know, just from hearing from our previous presentation here, that things like safety, parent engagement, climate, and culture of a school are all characteristics that lead to whether or not a school is high functioning and whether or not it supports our students' whole selves around academic and social emotional health. So just to give you a little bit more background about how this process works, our directors who are in our audience tonight, Julia Hodges and Marianne Brough, spent many hours using the self-study tools, reflection tools that were provided by the state, and basically compiled evidence around each of these indicators. There were things like, of course, they worked with HR in regards to teachers who are credentialed. They, a lot of it is also in our SARC, School Accountability Report Card, where we do have the FIT facility reports. They, you know, an evaluation of our instructional materials as we continue to not only implement but adopt master schedule offerings, and completion of the myriad of surveys that we have given and are planning on giving around school climate and social emotional health. So if you peruse and look down through this board cover, you will see narrative that we are required to do around each of the indicators, and around which we are showing due diligence and providing again evidence that we have met them. So it is based on this evidence and the self-study that we have done, that we recommend that the board approves that we have met the local indicators for our LCFF process and program.
Are there questions?
Yes.
Okay, Sheila, and then Patty.
I mean, I'm just wondering why, I'm trying to find it. This is probably a really silly, stupid answer. Like, you know, you can only go so far. But why was, at the very end, it says health education, physical education, visual performing arts, world language, are followed in each of their respective courses. After all of the information they gave for everything else, is it because those aren't a focus of the state, or is it because we got tired?
We only have a 3,000 character limit, and we are at our limit. And
that's a good answer.
It's an honest answer.
Sorry, that's what happens when you have an English teacher writing these reports.
Okay, I didn't think of that answer. I thought of every other thing. Thanks.
Patty?
So, Ms. Cueto, welcome, because you've stepped into a process that had been started from a different superintendent and also a new process in the state. I have questions around, and I'm trying to wrap my head around first because until I came to the meeting, I didn't realize that we'd be passing this. It was only listed in my first agenda as, sorry, nobody, no fault of anybody, but to wrap my head around this. So I guess I'll go into, of the seven, it's the different engagements. So this is local control. This is meeting, you know, of different staff, different, where would we find the information for knowing who was engaged and the notes to those meetings?
So that's actually in our LCAP. It's in our LCAP. There's a whole section on community engagement in the LCAP. It lists the dates of the meetings and a summary of the feedback we received.
Okay, and then in those pieces, do we list who they were, whether they were parents, whether they were staff? Because I was just at a community meeting that was attended by about 10, but 5 were from the district, and 5 were actually the parents. So I'm just looking for really the engagement factor and how we can not do the minimum, but really work towards hearing the entire community. A lot of times, such as a community meeting, maybe one vein hears about it and they come, and because they're the loudest voice or they're the voice that has the microphone at the time, doesn't necessarily represent the whole. So I'm looking for a process or a system in our communications, you know, that we can always point to. I know we have websites. We have a lot of communication, which makes it difficult, because before we used to get that one little parent letter home, way back when the dinosaurs roamed, came from the site, we all knew the message, we're all on one page. Now we're not. So I'm bringing these things up because I'm a more the merrier type of person, and I know it's very, very messy, but I think at some point the boat tips and then the community starts teaching themselves so that the school district can continue to work at the work at hand with the students, meeting their needs. So I wanted to ask a little bit about that, and what you see is the new eyes in the state here.
Well, I think it's important to just take note that when we say that we've met one of the priorities, it doesn't mean 100% proficiency in that priority. And I think we're very aware and know that we do. And, you know, I've been in several districts leading up to my tenure here, and it is very challenging to ensure that we have all voices at the table as far as our parents are concerned. And I think the fact that one of our LCAP goals is school climate, and that we're going to be looking at data and really looking at how we can take action and tighten how we can include more voices and parents is definitely a goal that we have and will continue to have. And when we start our forums, for lack of a better word, our district advisory committee meetings and parent input, we definitely take to heart, you know, that input around this issue, talking to principals as well as what works for them, looking at what happens out of our district where they've seen success. So it's definitely something that we will be working on, and it's very, very challenging. And you mentioned something like, how are we sure that people at the meeting are parents or not? Down to that detail of ensuring who's at the meeting, do we know who they are? If they're not there, how do we include them? Are we sure this is valid, you know, the sign-in sheets and that kind of thing, and why did a meeting work on one night and not another? It will continue to be a challenge for us, but one that we are committed to addressing.
Thank you. I do have a follow-up, but I see Deb has a question, so maybe they'll come out there.
A follow-up. So I agree with Patty. The community meetings that we instituted as a board a couple years ago are just not particularly successful, I don't think, are valuable to both the stakeholders and the district for getting information. But when I'm looking at what you have, I'm hoping that you're looking at the totality of all parent meetings, too, so yes. ELAC at each site as well as the district.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And those participation levels are fairly consistent mm-hmm. site to site. So at least on that piece, we're not necessarily attending those, but I think the piece that we're engaging, it's not, that's lacking. But you are taking into account in meeting this priority that those parent voices are being heard at those smaller meetings.
Absolutely. As well as, you know, we do, Molly just reminded me that we do a parent survey, an LCAP survey also, which will be going out in November. And that will help us, in addition to we continue to address
and
inclusiveness.
So, the coordinators help facilitate that on site?
Absolutely. And they are someone that, you know, we talked today about the community coordinators and how to better leverage them for parent, again, inclusion and making sure that they're participating in our schools, all of our parents.
Okay, I just want to add that our bilingual community coordinators are highly engaged in the survey this year. We do have bilingual community coordinators at 9 of our 10 sites, and they're very, it's a great group. They're very engaged in reaching out directly to parents and helping them. We do the survey in paper for our ELACs and our ELACs as well, whatever means we can, not counting only on digital responses as well. So that's been improving.
And over the last 3 years, we've increased the participation on our survey every year, so we're hoping we'll continue to get better at it.
So my follow-up question is, because I see that we have the California Healthy Kids survey, and I know that it's been brought forward before, and we were shown 3 questions. Are they the only questions on the survey, or does the survey go any deeper? The 3 questions that were listed? Do they have more than those 3 questions, or were those just example questions?
Those are example questions. So the Healthy Kids survey? Yeah.
Yeah, how many questions do they normally ask, and where could we see those?
You know, off the top of my head,
so I'm not sure.
It's quite a few, but the reason those were chosen in particular is the data is old. You saw these same questions last year when we reported out on our local indicator dashboard. It's the same exact data because we do it every other year. So these ones were chosen in particular because it goes back to our goal of school connectedness. And
okay.
Also, we chose these in particular because we saw some opportunities for growth.
Okay. Thank you for showing those in particular then in that manner. So it made me go to the Healthy Kids website because that's our California piece and it's married into our dashboard. And what I see that the website offers is that there is also, it's a 3-tiered system. We have the survey for kids, we have the survey for staff, and we have the survey for school parent. So I'm not sure why we're not using the totality of that and then taking that, because it was developed by WestEd for the California Department of Education, so I think that it's a standard that we could agree upon, and that it's also state subsidized. So instead of having so many different, we could be abstracting the data. We could get some very clear data, I think, in the same manner, in one vehicle. And I think that's why it was developed that way. So I'm putting it out there, and, you know, you obviously everybody is just new to this. But I thought that could be a really good tool to bring forward. And I would hope that by next October we could be talking about it in those 3 tiers and how it is, because I know that last month the governor signed into law family engagement, AB 2878. I'm not a policy wonk, but I do know that the governor says that you have to have it in your LCAP. So I think through that tool we'll be meeting that need. And it's going to go into our ed code. So I'm just putting it out there. We can look it up, but there are plenty of tools to do this and framework that I think are available that the district may want to try incorporate, so that next year we can be very data rich to start drilling into actually meeting the needs, not the maybe a stakeholder meeting that was part of the needs. I've been a parent, I've been a loud voice in certain areas. It doesn't mean that it's anybody's need, but what I think. So I'd like to see those surveys and really bring it in a package. And thank you. It's not a criticism.
Just to give some context, the reason we haven't done that in the past is because of the cost.
But it's state subsidized, so I don't. Let's find out how much the cost is.
We definitely go back and see if there are new subsidies for it. And we also, when we designed our parent survey, we really aligned it specifically to our LCAP to get specific feedback on things we're doing in our LCAP and then ask open-ended questions about...
I appreciate that, but I'm also always leery of building a vehicle that leads to the data I want to see as opposed to getting into the vehicle for the data that the community wants to bring. And so I'm going to push.
Okay, well, this is an action item, so we do need to vote tonight. Go ahead, Sheila.
I just want to request, if I understand correctly, the 16-17, and then we'll do it again next year? This year. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can't get these dates right. Okay. When we get that back, will we have both so we can see the change?
Patty, are you through with your...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't turn that off. Thank you.
Do you have a motion?
Do you want to have a motion first or public first?
Oh, public. I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. Either
way. Any comments? Or... Well, we did go before for the public hearing.
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained?
I'm going to abstain because I didn't know this was coming that way.
Our next item is another staff report, Integrated English Language Development.
Yes, I would like to call up Directors Julia Hodges and Marianne Robb. We're going to be talking about integrated ELD in our district. All
right. As you know, one of our strategic focus areas is... two strategic focus areas that have to do with integrated ELD, English learner progress and academic literacy. And to that end, at our last year's retreat, we identified K-12 at all the grade spans, at elementary, middle, and high school, that we wanted to focus on integrated ELD, that is the teaching of the academic literacy of the language. So we wanted to show you, bring you up to actions to date on that initiative. So, we've got... Again, I want to remind people that, you know, we are teaching, I love this quote because it really speaks to why, you know, the purpose of our schools and what we're teaching. We teach language not for the sake of teaching language, but to learn about the world, to learn about science, to learn about history, to learn about art and music and all those other things. Language is the key to that. And part of this initiative of integrated ELD is really... reinforcing, bringing to light the duty that all of us, you know, regardless of subject, it's our duty to teach the academic language of that subject and get to give all kids access. So we can go on. And again, you know, this is about that, you know, integrated ELD gives our students access to the content of the classes they're in. It's one thing to put them in a class and assign them in a master schedule. They're reflective in all these classes, but do they really have access to the language? And again, one of the shifts in our instructional practice is really to plan lessons. The goal is to plan lessons with the edges of the class room in mind. To that end, we don't plan a message to meet the needs of the average student. But we want to be moved towards planning lessons, and our instructional model will be one where we're planning for the very highest students, the students that might speak another language, the special ed student, the person that's left, and when we plan for the middle, those kids in the edges their needs are not met. And there is a model, it's part of our MTSS training, called Universal Design for Learning, UDL, that first started to explore our district. But this is, it really is about equity and giving everybody access to the content. You go, okay, it's wonderful. This graphic, and you'll see a lot when we talk about ELD, and we all lovingly refer to it as a turtle graphic. But as you see, in the center of, these are our California English Language Arts and English Language Development Standards. It's a graphic representation of that. And at the very center of that are the California ELD standards. That has to be in place before children can access our English Language Arts and Literacy Standards that are in the next circle around that. To that end, around that circle that's moving out, we have the five language themes that we explored in our elementary curriculum day on August 20th. Content knowledge, language development, meaning-making, effective expression, and foundational skills are all important themes in teaching language. And then going out to that, why do we teach language? Again, to learn about the world, to understand the world. Readiness for college, career, and civic life. Capacities of literate individuals, 21st century, etc. I don't know if you know about that. We all know the importance. But California standards are at the center of that. That is their ramp, their threshold. That is their way in to learning all they need to do that. So, yeah, in all content areas. And again, integrated ELD, designated ELD is the teaching of the discrete skills that one would need to to master the English language. Integrated ELD is the academic literacy on that. There is definitely overlap. Rigorous content in English, but integrated ELD, we're using the ELD standards in tandem with the literacy and the content standards of whatever subject we're talking about.
So designated ELD at secondary is usually a standalone class where it's the elective class, and then integrated ELD, we're talking about infusing academic instruction into all content areas.
I don't spend too much time on this, but again, these are some of the differences you have when you pull out. Again, designated ELD at elementary, similarly to secondary, we have done various things in the past. We've leveled kids, we've grouped them, we try to get a couple of levels in a group across grade levels. It really depends on the numbers. When you have three or four English learners in class, or if you have 20 English learners in class, it really much depends on that. More and more we see classes going to providing their own designated ELD for their very own students related to the content is the newer model of designated ELD, as well as integrated ELD.
So integrated ELD in all academic content areas is a really lofty goal, and we know it's a really necessary one. We know all students are academic English learners, but it's essential that we provide supports, especially for our English language learners. And so some of the things that we've done, this was established as a priority in February, March last school year, and we started to build our plan of what that might look like for this year. How are we going to start bringing people up to speed with what integrated ELD is? What does that look like in the classroom? What are specific instructional strategies that content area teachers can use to support English language learners and reclassified students in learning academic English in their content area? So we've done a few different things. In June, we had a two-day training for all administrators, site administrators and district office administrators, to really help build our district administrative capacity to be leaders in this work. We really believe strongly that our administrators need to be the lead learners, and so we front-loaded with them a lot of materials that then we've been starting to share with teachers when the school started in August. On August 13th, during our skill day, one of our breakout sessions, it was a mandatory session that we had all skill leaders attend, and then they had some choice in the day too, but that was the one mandatory session, was on integrated ELD, and we started to dive in with those teachers and some of the resources that we started sharing with principals in the summer. August 15th and 16th, we had our first GLAD training at secondary. I know there's some GLAD already happening in elementary, but this is the first that we've done with secondary teachers. Be Glad is a specific group that stemmed out of research that happened a long time ago, but they've been building this, their repertoire of different instructional strategies in the classroom. It's all focused on academic language acquisition in the content area. And I had the opportunity to attend both days of training along with Tracy Runieri and about 25 secondary teachers. Most of them were Harvard teachers. And the training was really well received and done really well in a way that both Shad and Tracy report to me that they're seeing the GLAD strategies being utilized among their staff and that they're bringing those to their PLCs. And they're also bringing, we have more upcoming follow-up GLAD trainings that are going to happen in January with all those 25 teachers that participated this summer. Then elementary
PDP, yes, we did focus on, we've taken the California English Language Arts English Language Development Framework. We pulled out sections of that, again, focusing on those language themes that you saw in the little turtle diagram. We then applied those themes to a vignette from the framework, which is a model lesson, and where do those themes appear, and how is integrated EOD happening in this lesson. And then we took the same themes and applied them. The teachers were asked to bring lessons that they were about to teach within the content area of their choice, and they applied those themes to their own lessons. And then they, at the very end of the day, they identified actions that, you know, what are we going to do? And the exciting thing about that day was it was all elementary certificated staff, including music teachers, including art teachers, including librarians. So they were working in their job alike or their grade alike, and how does this apply to our work? How are we going to engage in that academic literacy, English Learner Progress 3, integrated ELD in our respective job alikes?
This year we created a backwards design professional development plan for administrators to use to plan their site-specific PD. And that PD plan, we shared an example with you of what the integrated ELD portion looks like in your in the board report. I think it was either Mission Hills or D40s, but you can see how that backwards design works and how principals are able to work with their skill teams to really hone in on what makes sense for their school and where they're at and what training they've had before. And they're really looking at building skills that teachers already have as well as bringing in some new ones to support the integrated ELD happening in all content areas.
So the next few slides, we're not going to go through all these points, but we wanted, for each of our trainings, and again, we're modeling having clear objectives for our trainings, and so these are examples of the objectives. The first day of our administrative training, these are the objectives that we have, and you have them in your packet, but this is what we did on the first day. And day two, another set of objectives, so really clear, really tying our instruction to clear learning objectives and intentions. And so it gives you an idea of what integrated, what were we doing in these trainings. The next page, one of the tools that we co-developed is, we've taken this from the California ELEOD framework, and then we've adapted it by we talked a lot about visible learning and John Hattie's work and the effect size of certain instructional practices. Instructional practices that really are part of teaching the integrated ELD, and where applicable, we put the effect size in there. So you can see that intellectual quality, academic English, interactive and engaging thing. This is what integrated ELD looks like. So this is a tool for teachers, for administrators to see, what is it? What am I seeing? Is this happening?
We want to build upon that work that we've already been doing with John Hattie and visible learning to make sure that teachers know that it's not really anything new. Like when we talk about teacher clarity here, clear lesson objectives, we've already been doing that work and just trying to make connections for people to see that this is one way that we really do support our English language learners in our classrooms. These are the essential features of integrated ELD.
Again, our 13th, the skill day that we mentioned a minute ago, again, part of the work was certainly on PLCs, as we discussed last time, but certainly our strategic focus areas, and then define and understand the key features of integrated ELD. Again, repeating that theme and going deeper each time. And now each of these trainings was a slightly different audience. There was some overlap, but now this is something that is going to take time. It's not a one-and-done thing. Again, research, as we know, says that you need about 14 hours on any particular practice to do it. So we're going deeper. It's not check, done that, we're done. So, and then...
With GLAD training, teachers already received 14 hours of training this summer that went to the training, and they're going to receive 14 more hours through the school year, really focusing in on... in January, it's really exciting. We get to go watch the trainers in a classroom at Harbor, actually using the strategies that they taught us back in August with students, and all the teachers that were part of the trainer are going to be observing, watching how the teacher engages with the student, how they do the strategies, and there's some planned debrief sessions and then work time for teachers to then take what they just saw, what they knew from the training in August, and continue to build out their lessons to include supports for English learners. So we're excited about that.
And again, some of the learning changes to the August 20th, I already kind of gave a brief outline.
There's another resource we provided you in your board cover, and that was an article that we used to create the PD plan template, so you can kind of see the logic. I think it was actually called
Focus First on Outcomes.
And we're really trying to do that, so we do have that backwards design in mind as we're really focusing on students and what do we want the impact to be on our students, and then what do we need to do from there so that we have that effect on students.
So focusing first on the outcomes, then what educated practices do we need to see to have those outcomes? Backwards then, what do we need to learn in order to do those practices so that students can have their, those outcomes, and then what processes and activities we need to launch, and importantly, what resources do we have to map in that one? Time and money and training and subs and all the things that we need to make that happen. So that is our presentation.
Sheila has a question.
Comment, I liked having the article and to kind of orient me towards where you're coming with it. Mm-hmm. My question is, so until tonight, I was thinking differentiated ELD is being replaced by integrated ELD, but then it seemed like that was not the case, and so then I'm wondering, is it temporarily not replaced, or is the goal to have both? And if so, which I actually think is a good idea, why?
we'll always need both. Because kids need, this designated ELD is really, how does English work? How do I say this? How do you do that? And giving kids real, real direction or instruction in the English language. But we see with integrated ELD, and that gets kids up to a certain level of fluency, certainly. But what we, with the integrated ELD, what's so important, and I know we've done it for years, is you can't wait until somebody masters English to start teaching content. And so what you'd see in a GLAD classroom or even in kindergarten is, they're learning English and they're learning content. They're learning science at the same time, or they're learning. So that, we can't wait till fourth or fifth grade, because we know it takes 5 or 6 years to, I want to say the word in Spanish, building up to really master a language. And so, but we can't wait that long to be teaching science, math, all the really important core things. So they have to happen both ways. So the designated, you might have, and it has to be tied to content. So let's say you're doing a science unit. You would be having your integrated ELD. Everybody gets it. It happens for everybody, that integrated ELD, which also is very supportive of children that come from perhaps poverty or less language, rich homes, for example. That's going to help them. That's that academic English that they need. It's one thing to speak playground English, but to get to that academic English, they need that. However, you might have a small group in your classroom that for which they really do not, they need direct instruction on how do you speak English, how does English work, listening, speaking, reading, and writing the English language,
how to make a sentence and all that. But it, while, you know, when you're doing that, you're not, you're giving the kids content or access to the grade level content, mm-hmm. even if it's scaled down, simplified language, but higher level thinking.
Thank you. And I do like the backwards model. I think that a lot can be learned in that direction that you spoke about. I appreciate that you were talking about the measures of success for this. I know that we've had the evaluation of growth, but in a different piece. Maybe the next time we bring this forward, we can have a comparison of our growth chart or where we stand right now. You can bring that piece for our indicators of you know, how do we measure? I mean, we have the growth in reading and the mathematic and the math scores, but if we could actually have those along with the presentation, that would be great to kind of give us a baseline to where we are. We have, last week we saw, and we know there's work to be done, but if we could bring it with this background next time, it would be great. Thank you.
Are there questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very nice presentation. Right. Our next item is the seabeds.
Okay, can I just take a look at some seabed stuff? We did this last time. We wrote across elementary and secondary there, and see in these columns here. You show here's the 17-18 CBEDS number in this column here. And here's 18-19, and this spreadsheet reflects the difference between the 18-19 number here in elementary and the 17-18 number in elementary. So overall, a decrease of 126 CBEDS numbers. On the secondary side, similar column here, you got the 18-19 CBEDS count here at 121, and the 17-18 CBEDS count here at 4900. So some growth here, which we anticipated as well, in the secondary, and we've got a decline in our elementary for a combined, if you take this 126 number and this 27 number here, you got an overall aggregate decline year to year in our CBEDS numbers of 99 year to year. And I know that, you know, this is a side note, I know that there's concern on an annual basis if we have declining enrollment, how we manage that. We've got some incredible people in classrooms every day, doing amazing work with kids. I know that the past several years we've been able to manage this decline in our enrollment and through attrition and working on HR team. So hopefully that trend will be able to continue. We had a decrease in our FTEs this year, but want to work really hard to with folks to make sure that we use all the hours we could rather than hand out things to suppose. So hopefully that trend will continue. We have, as you know, we have an ongoing anticipated decline in enrollment trend. So we'll take a look at those numbers later. Next slide shows you a couple different breakdowns. This is looking at that same data we looked at by school. First column here is showing you the 18-19 CBEDS enrollment number, and then the 17-18 CBEDS enrollment number for this overall decline in CBEDS here, 99 for those folks who are kind of walking this column and column, this overall decline here, 99. And then what we looked at also is our projected numbers here of our 18-19 projection of 65-27 relative to our actual CBEDS number here of 65-18. So a difference of 12. So again, the information we're getting from Decision Insight in the aggregate looks to be pretty accurate. In the past 2 years, they were within 1%. This number 12 out of the overall number. I haven't done the percentage, but it's pretty close. So pretty close to what we're seeing. You know, when you look at the individual schools, a little bit of variance. I know the superintendent talked about some of these trends we're seeing throughout the district in one of the recent presentations. And so there's a question about that later. We'll get into that. But overall, again, the data from Decision Insight looks to be fairly accurate, and that's for this is the third year now. You've got information from Decision Insight, and we've gotten multi-year projections from them, and again, we have from them an anticipated decline in enrollment forecast for the next several years. So their forecast looks to be pretty accurate, and so we'll see what that trend looks like. The next couple slides break this down by elementary, and then by middle schools, by high schools, and by small schools. I'll come back to that later. So just let you know, we just kind of did this overall trend delta for you. And these columns here, you're in 17, 18, to the preliminary numbers by elementary schools, and you'll see that decline there. The middle schools also, looking here in terms of this trend, between 17, 18, and 18, 19. Similarly for high schools, we're looking at the trend here, of some growth in the high schools. And then looking at small schools, what the trend is here. I think we have to move this number here. I have to go back to 372. Okay. So again, big picture, I'm going to go back to the beginning slides here. I'm looking at our projected enrollment, and we're looking at our actual enrollment here, 6515 versus 6527, and looking at the current year enrollment relative to the prior year enrollment. We had a forecast of a decline in our enrollment. We're seeing a decline in our enrollment, and then our projections are within 12 of the actual forecast enrollment. Again, multi-year, we show that there's a continuing decline. We hope we'll manage that and always help through the different options. Okay? Mm-hmm. Questions?
Okay.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you, Molly, because knowing that the workforce through attrition is helping to address where we are now has made it easier, I think, on the bargaining units and the climate for this process. But the optics of what's happening and in our narrative as we move forward for our needs, is it's going to be very important that we as a board think of our long-term plan. And I'm really hoping to see, you know, we have three comprehensive high schools. I think the community wants three comprehensive high schools, but I think the community may agree that dollars need to follow the students to the high schools they're at. So along with the equity pieces that may bring the workforce there, when I think of Santa Cruz High School, for example, with 301 more students than Harbor High School, I'm curious to know what type of staff got to follow, because the volume of a front office staff at Santa Cruz High School to Harbor High School is incredibly different. And there's also not just the number, but the tipping point of 10 students more can feel like 100 students more after a certain part. So I'd like to know what we're going to do as a board to address that in our planning. You know, we've gone out, and so we have 334 students more at Soquel High School than at our smallest high school. And I know that just in our bond planning, it was taken into consideration at the time that the dollars were parsed out to that. Something to think about. And I want to think about that also in class loads and class sizes, because that number fell short by quite a bit. That means that you might have been staffed for two more full class periods at the smaller high school than the others. And did teachers follow? Are class sizes comparable from high school to high school?
So for the folks on we provide some information in your cover sheet about class size averages. There's some interest in that. Can go back and
but it only says the class size average of one of the higher high schools. And it would be nice to dig a little bit deeper into that. You know, an average could mean that there's one class of 24 and another of 42. That can happen in scheduling. I know scheduling is a huge domino effect to the needs. None of this is easy, but we have parcel taxes, we have bonds, and the optics to where the dollars go, I think along with the local control, people are expecting that the dollars follow to the schools that the students are at. There's need at all schools. I just want to put that out there for the board to think about.
Go ahead, Dee Dee.
I think I need some clarity about what we're talking about, Patty, because when you say the dollars need to follow the students, are you talking facilities? Are you talking teaching staff? Are you talking programs. You also mentioned local control, and you also mentioned the word equity. And equity doesn't necessarily mean the dollars follow the students. So I want to understand what you mean by that statement.
So by that statement, I mean yes to all. Equity, of course, we start the students with the needs to move to the area that they can reach the Apple. You know, we had a visual in one of ours. So we have those dollars. And so a school that has higher needs would have that. But if the school has higher population, dollars have to follow also. So they need to shift. It takes more staff to help 1,100 students than it does 800 students. It may take more concentrated staff for certain students' needs. I'm not taking away from the equitable formula, but I'm wanting the board in our long-term planning to know that the community expects that if there's a bigger high school, there would be as many availabilities to service, meaning an office staff that if you have counselors, if you have four counselors at a school of 800, that's 200 students per counselor, but four in a school of 1,100 is almost 300 students per counselor. These are the sort of things that the community, however we get to where we are, needs to know as a board why we've made those decisions and how the dollars follow all the students. So it's not taking away from the formulated part, meaning the equitable part, but just the volume. I mean, in facilities, when you go on to a site that has 300 or 400 students more, constantly using 3 or 4 restrooms, they may need to be addressed. I would encourage everyone to get onto all 3 of our comprehensive high school sites. And I think you will see, I was just recently at Soquel High, I know I'm more familiar with it, but I just think that we really need to think about all students and how we shift to follow the needs. The students are not all at Harbor High School. They're at the other 2 high schools. It may come if we have another decrease, a conversation around having the cost of what 2 high schools are to run. And that's going to be, I think we should be prepared in any direction.
So, if we're deciding teachers...
We're not deciding anything tonight. We're just,
no, I know.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
That's me being... Anyway, if we're deciding teachers, we do decide it based on what we need for schools, right?
Based off those projections is what we staff at. And elementary, we can be a little slower to staff back because... we don't have such a shortage there, and typically that's where more of our temp people are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll bring back kind of as needed, and then the high school gets a little more complicated because we do go off those projections. If we're hearing once enrollment comes in and they're seeing that their enrollment's higher, you know, we may add 0.2s or 0.4s along the way. But we staff based on those projections for the most part.
And if the enrollment goes down, do we take people away?
Once we give them that contract, it's very hard. And once they get into that schedule, it's really hard to start pulling sections away. Although we are looking at some people that we've added, like a 1.22, if we're able to pull that 2 and move some things around without disrupting student schedules.
Right. Or have, do you have it where teachers go to more than one school? I mean, I know you do
it's
specialty things.
It's pretty difficult given all the schedules, the ABs, the CDA layouts and all that. So we do have some our special teachers, but it's at a point it's pretty difficult to get even our middle schools to line up with like Harbor or Soquel that's a little more on the same schedule. Even that's really difficult to try to line up schedules. It can work. Yeah. We do have a couple doing that.
Right.
I was thinking from what Patty was saying that where I could see the difference, because we saw it in the elementary schools when several of them got so large, mm-hmm. is when, like, there was times when we said, it's too bad we couldn't have a principal and an assistant principal at some of the schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that I'm sure the staff would, at the schools would say, like, the staff at Galt versus the staff at De La Viega at its highest might say they really actually do need more help. So I think that's more, I can see your point more from that point of view, that it's something that I think it's never gotten to a perfect number where you could do anything about it. I mean, when we were talking about Westlake and De La Viega being so high, but they weren't so high that you could actually say, oh, let's put an extra principal in, or, you know, let's put an extra full staff person.
From kind of their highest point, too.
Yeah. So it is seeing Harvard's low score, low amount, versus Soquel's higher. It does make you say, huh, you know, I could see where looking at that you would see a big difference. But I'm not sure exactly what. It's a good thing to think about.
So when we have our study session in January, when we're talking about IDTs and looking at enrollment trends and projections, I think we could start to have a larger conversation about site needs and staffing and how those things all correlate to enrollment. And so that could be a part of that discussion.
That'd be good. Thank you.
And it is true that it's something we may have even more of a problem like that down the line.
Sorry.
Yeah, I look forward to that discussion, and I think it's really critical to think about how we're adequately staffing each site to meet the needs of the students, definitely. But I also think we could turn this on its head and think about how can we change the landscape of these three sites such that students are going to be drawn to each site more equally? Because Harvard has amazing things to offer, and somehow that messaging is not getting out there, just as the other two high schools do as well. And maybe do some work and investigation about, you know,
we're seeing more attrition in our A-side schools. There are more families renting or were renting on the east side, and I really believe, and I don't have all the empirical data, but based on all of our conversations with families, that so much, and we do know from our data on leaving where the people are moving out of the community, they're more in that area, I think, part because there's more rentals. They didn't say we left our rental. They just said we're leaving the area. Mm-hmm. But there's more of an impact in that corridor than there is in some of our others.
So you think it's cost of living?
Part of it.
Part of what's driving the movement.
Part of it.
The cost of housing. Yeah.
Cost of housing, yeah.
Okay.
It's just a comment. I appreciate that we'll be having that conversation. And I also look at Galt to De La Viega. You know, what does it feel like to be on both sides, and what does it take? Those numbers are really very, there's a very large piece to it. And what we can do to offer to, you know, sometimes things have to shift. Programs may move to another campus and something else may move through. You know, there's just to think in those realms. I know that that's a very small campus, so it kind of works that it isn't super large, but I just wanted to put that piece out there.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, or looking at changing how we do enrollment in our high schools. I mean, we have open enrollment at all of these schools. That could be another part of the discussion.
Comments from the public?
Casey Carlson for the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers. So I've been out doing site visits, and I never know when there's an issue that we may be aware of, whether teachers are not aware of it at all, and I'm going to tell them about it. or I go to the site and I hear about it. And that's what happened this week regarding the CBIDs and enrollment. And there's a lot of concern, and Molly and I talked about that, and thank you, Pat, for saying that. I think we've been very responsibly handling the shrinking of teaching pool through attrition. And I know that a lot of teachers have said that they're going to be retiring this year and next, so I think that part is going to work out okay. I heard from Galt teachers a lot of concern about their shrinking, and they pointed out that same parallel that I think Patty said, that it's sort of the same part of the community as Harbor High. Mm-hmm. And that was their theory, that it's a lot of rentals and rental mm-hmm. prices are going up, so people are moving. So they were concerned about that. I've heard from some Harbor High staff saying, you know, can we sustain this number? You know, are we going to need to do something else with this school site? You know, mix it with something else? But the overall kind of question was, and concern, and I think especially from those of us who were around in the school closure days and know what an awful time that was. So I'm really happy to hear what Chris is saying. The overall thing was, whatever, let's look at everything ahead of time, slowly, carefully, deliberately, looking at options, bringing in stakeholders, saying what's best. Is it refiguring grades from middle to high school? Like, let's put everything out there and look at it rather than being reactive. But, you know, concern about the budget, because just in terms of efficiency, you know, you shrink the teachers. You might shrink the teachers' aides, but you're not shrinking the secretary and the two vice principals and all of that. So then that becomes an expense for the district where you're not getting the ADA. So just, you know, that wasn't what I expected this week, but three schools where everybody was saying, you know, what's the plan going forward? So we'll be interested to be, you know, part of that conversation.
This is not an action item. And our next item is discussion of possible items for the future meetings. Do we have anything to discuss?
I didn't hear anything. I jot down if I didn't hear something.
Right. All right. So we're going to adjourn to closed session.
And I want everyone to know I sent you an email a little while ago, and I just want to make sure that everybody reads it sometime too, because I did discover something new in our software program while we're sitting here. And yes, I will utilize it in the future for you.
I bet you are.
And then I got a dog, and I had to bring the dog back, and I'm just like, that one. Dog was self aggressive.
I didn't know it existed until I heard Patty comment and made her searching for it.
Yeah. Yeah, they killed the other dog. Cutest little dog.
Well, I'm glad you're thinking about getting a pet. So that's all the pets. That's yeah, not well, a cat.
It seemed less likely after this.
Well, you know, it may not have been the right fit right then, but it doesn't mean that you won't have the right fit. You're pretty open.
We'll see, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so she'll be back.
Okay, back to close.
Be back in a month.
No, yeah, we're waiting for you
I
to cue us in.
I did get up and set that down.
Well, it's after 8.
Well, that's all right. Just sit here.
But I should take things.
This one that was kind of very
lovely. So we'll still need to take one chair in.
One chair? Okay. What's the narrative?
I told her about your life when you got here. And that she could go to the district website and look at the book every Friday prior to the meeting. You know, those kinds of things. No problem. I don't know. I think she's had a chance
to talk
with
her. Sarah's one of
the best. I think she would be a great addition.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
She did great.
Oh, yeah. She did great. Considering she just showed up because I would not know what the heck was going on.
Yeah, she's a nice, that's nice.
I think they kind of. No.
Yeah, I wish our other student would be here. She's part of.
piece of candy with me.
Are you going to take your chair, Patty? Yeah, I can do that. I don't lose my glasses.
That's my excuse, and I'm sticking
with it. It's your excuse, because I'll use the same, Dee Dee.
It's got peanuts. It's
there
healthy.
You go.
There you go.
She got peanuts. She convinced herself that was healthy.
These have Rice Krispies. It's like cereal.
Yeah, Rice Krispies. What her mother used to say about apple pie. She used to say, it's good for you. Got apples and lemons.
Oh, your mom.
That's right.
All right.
A few other things, too, Ma.
Okay. So here, bring a coat. Don't say I was doing this chair thing. Yes, I did. Didn't I? Let's commit, and I'm making you hold the door all that time. Thank you very much.
Sometimes where they need someone to come in and take notes if they're doing something especially detailed, you know. Mm-hmm. And I do though, but that's rare.